Mr. Boyer, good morning to you. Before you begin, Mr. Smith and Ms. Schlecht, who is going to argue for your?
Please, the court, Ms. Schlecht, and I have agreed that. Go first.
Okay, you'll split the time, 5 minutes apiece? 5 minutes apiece, you're going to split your time? And you have to keep track of that. The bailiff will not do. Very good. Appreciate that. Mr. Moyer, do you have any questions before we begin? You may remove your face mask. As a matter of fact, we would request you do that so we can hear and understand what you have to say. And with that, again, good morning to you, and you may proceed.
May it please the court, my next birthday, I'll be 85 years old, and that's apparently affected my vision because I have trouble telling the difference between a 2 and a 3. And that may be one of the reasons why we're here today. However, I think the most important reason that we're here today is to help clerks of county court and county clerks in cases of this kind to determine what constitutes the payment of a deposit to their court. Now, a deposit in court is simply writing a check and handing it to the officer to whom the check is made.
Was there one check or two checks?
Well, there were two checks here, Judge. There was one check that was made payable to the clerk at the district court in the amount of $82, which is not technically a deposit. Deposit is where you write the check to the officer, and the statute says that you have to make a deposit. So we made a deposit for costs also. Besides that $82 check, we deposited $1,000.
And that check was to?
$100, excuse me, let me amend that, $100. And that check was to the county clerk. And that would be, as I understand the definition, a deposit. Okay, so what happened here, as everyone's agrees, is that the clerk prepared a transcript and carried it over to the district court, and it was filed on October 19th. The last day to take an appeal in that case, in this case, was October 15th. And she also took the check payable to the clerk of the district court over there. But that was a dollar short. And it's our contention that she had $100 in costs that had been deposited with her in her office, and that she could have and should have supplemented that check, which was a dollar short, with a dollar from that deposit.
And do you have statutory authority or case authority? Or
absolutely none.
So,
I mean, you've never seen this case arise before.
Is it complicated by the fact that in Ulmer, we sort of had to analogize a procedure to follow in appeals from conditional use permits, because the legislature said that when an appeal of that sort is taken, it shall be the procedure to use is that followed from appeal from county court to district court. But that procedure doesn't work here because the action didn't originate in the county court. So Ulmer sort of said, it recognized that, and it said, it doesn't fit perfectly, but here we think what we're going to do is have the notice of appeal filed with the county clerk. And we didn't address in that case where the filing fee should be deposited, but the statute, the 25-2729 that we apply in situations where a right to appeal is given, but no specific procedure is set out, says under sub B that it should deposit with the clerk of the county court, the docket fee in district court. That couldn't be done here, right?
Well, you couldn't deposit it with the clerk of the county court, but you could sure deposit it with the county clerk.
Right, which is sort of the next level of Ulmer. I guess I'm taking a long path to ask you this question. How much spot welding, counsel, should this court be doing of the statute that authorizes appeals from conditional use permits?
Well,
if it doesn't fit, who should fix it?
I think that it's reasonable for the court to construe this statute to allow the clerk to take a deposit that's been made with the clerk for costs.
The county.
Whether it's the right amount or whether it isn't, whether it's more than the right amount, as it is in this case, and let the clerk make the payment to the clerk of the district court, and the clerk of the district court files a transcript, and away we go, and nobody loses any rights.
Does the record show who actually received in the first instance the check for the $82?
Yes, that.
It went to the county clerk.
Yeah, it went to the county clerk.
And the county clerk in turn delivered it to the clerk of the district court.
That's right.
Okay. I want to shift gears just a little bit to be clear. In some of the briefing, there were references to some relatively old cases that had to do with transcripts being jurisdictional. Can we all agree that since the 1940s or at least the 1960s, transcripts are not jurisdiction?
Well, I might argue with you about the date, because the first case I ever argued in this court was Anoka-Duke Lumber Company, and that was at 65.
Well, put aside when, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
Since transcripts were jurisdictional, right?
Well, I'm not too sure that transcripts are not jurisdictional still. You still have to have that order that was entered by the lower court. And so there has to be something that shows that, and that would be a transcript. Otherwise, the district court has a perfectly good right to ask the attorneys when they appear before him, why are we here? Because there's no order. This is ostensibly an appeal from which you're appealing. So I think transcripts are important, and I think they still have hold a lot of weight here.
The Ulmer decision that my colleague referenced that interprets this 25-1937,
right,
which relies upon the procedure from county court to district court. Can we not agree that the procedure from county court to district court expressly says that the only things that are jurisdictional are notice of appeal and deposit of docket fee?
That's right.
Okay.
That's what that statute says. And what they said in a case called Stege, and what they said again in Ulmer following Stege, was that you can't look at this statute 25-27-29 because strictly apply it, because you have to proceed by analogy, because it's designed and intended for a judicial proceeding, and even says judicial proceeding. And so, which would either be criminal or civil, but this was not a judicial proceeding in the lower court. It was an argument over whether a conditional use permit should be allowed. So
I beg your pardon, Mr. Moyer. I do have a question. And that is, this is a rather imperfect area in terms of statutes, perhaps. But ultimately, it seems like appellant is asking the clerks to maintain the piggy bank, and then when money is needed, put it in the, dole it out in the right manner. And I don't know that is a task that is properly assigned to a clerk. Now, for what it's worth, and I'll confess, I may have been young and stupid, but in 1993, I was the author of an opinion called Moore, and it's at the Court of Appeals, where we refused to convert unreturned bond money into a docket fee. We didn't think at that point, albeit an unpublished opinion, that was an additional duty of the clerk. Do you think it's the clerk's duty?
Well, I know the case that you're talking about, Your Honor, and I thought in that case that the county judge agreed with the defendant's counsel that she would consider $50 that she had on hand as sufficient to pay a fee on appeal. And I don't think she had any statutory authority to do that. And I don't think that that case is like this one because of the odd way that, and the odd reasoning that that was, that turned on. But in this case, I'm not asking for the clerk to maintain a piggy bank, but I'm just saying, if you have to pay a filing fee in the district court, which everybody agrees at this time was $83, and now I don't know what it is or what it'll become, but would you dismiss this appeal because you had $100 instead of 83? That's what that $100 was for.
Under your theory, let's say you deposited the $100, but you never paid a filing fee. Well, under your theory, the $100 should just automatically move over and cover that filing fee, isn't it?
No, if you follow those statutes down from the principal statute that we're talking about here, the subsequent statutes say it is the clerk's mandatory statutory duty to file that transcript. Now, under the old law, it was the lawyer's mandatory statutory duty to file that transcript.
I'm not talking about the transcript. I'm just talking about you have a $100 check with the county clerk.
Okay.
And you owe 83 to the clerk of the district court. Okay. Instead of being $1 short, you're all $83 short. Under your theory, you're saying that $100 should be used to cover that 83, which would negate the filing of the filing fee in any manner, wouldn't it?
I don't think it would negate the filing fee, but you've got $100, and that's more than the amount of the filing fee. It's not the precise amount of the filing fee, but
well,
it would satisfy the statute, it seems to me.
Isn't the $100 deposit, if you will, isn't it for some reason? And wouldn't the clerk be violating his or her responsibility reserving that money for a different reason?
Well, under the old procedure, you used to have to file a bond with your notice of appeal, but now you don't have to file a bond, and there's only a discrete kinds of cases under that statute that we're talking about in which you do have to have a bond, and that's where you're appealing a money judgment in the county court, or when you're appealing in a criminal case and you have to have a bond, appearance bond for the county court. So we've pretty much eliminated the necessity of a bond, and what we're doing here is we're requiring a deposit for costs. And
where do you take me to the statutory requirement for that deposit?
Well, Judge Smith over here to my right says that the county clerk can demand it, but she didn't demand it in this case.
And so why was it paid?
Why was it paid? It was, she has to prepare a transcript. That's going to cost you something. You know it's going to cost you something, and she's going to make a charge for that. So I give her some money for that. But I also give her some money for any other costs that are going to be accrued in this thing, because the difference between this statute and the old statutes is that now she takes the transcript over to the clerk of the district court, and she pays the clerk of the district court the filing fee, which used to be the responsibility of the lawyer who was appealing. Okay.
I beg your pardon. Are we all in agreement that this money, there was no money judgment under 25370, so this wasn't a bond triggered by a money judgment. This was just some money.
Yes, that was what it was. It was from money, which I thought might be necessary to defray the costs of this appeal for whatever reason, for any reason. I just never did one of these appeals where there wasn't something that came up and that you needed to have some extra money on hand to get things done right and then get them filed in the proper court. So we gave them a deposit for costs.
So it's your position that the clerk of the county court received from you on behalf of your client $182, right?
No, she didn't get the $82 because that check was made payable to the clerk of the district court.
Okay.
The deposit that we made was $100.
All right.
And my argument is that was more than the filing fee in the district court. And that therefore, the appeal was perfected. She must have thought it was perfected because she took that transcript over to the clerk of the district court, and the clerk of the district court must have thought it was perfected because she filed it. So no harm, no foul here. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Smith, good morning to you.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Joe Smith, representing the county, one of the appellees. I left my suit jacket in the room. I think last time I was here was on Ulmer case, as a matter of fact. Ulmer, to answer questions raised, was a hog confinement lot that was going in. The county raised the issue that it should have been by petition and error. This was a case of first impression. The Supreme Court said, we are going to allow 25, 27, 29, and the little body, whether it be a county or, for example, Omaha Police Department case, you know, in the quasi-judicial, that becomes like the county. So the 25, 27, 29 was kind of shoehorned in. There was a remedy there, but there was no procedure, and that's what Omaha was about. However, this case, I believe the only issue before you at this time is a jurisdictional issue. And I realize the record has an issue that I may have created by asking court to take judicial notice and not following up. However, other not paying, if you look at the first page of the transcript, T1, you'll see that the spot where whether or not the statement of filing fees paid says to be provided. When you look at the bill of exceptions, starting on page 14, about 5, going about 2 or 3 pages, you will see that Mr. Moyer and I engage in various agreements or stipulations, judicial admission, certainly. So the issue here is, again, the record is sufficient to get to it. And it is jurisdiction, subject matter jurisdiction, is not the burden of the appellee show, it is the burden of the appellant. And this court has said many times, and one example is Breeden, B-R-E-E-D-E-N, versus Nebraska Methodist Hospital, that the appellate court has its own independent duty to examine whether it has jurisdiction. This court can only acquire jurisdiction if the district court did. To answer the question that was raised several times, there were two checks.
What's missing in the district court?
What's Matt?
What is missing in the district court for jurisdiction?
You will see on page 14 of the bill of exceptions, about the 5th line, Mr. Moyer asked me, will Mr. Smith agree about the checks? It goes on for about 2 pages. The next page in the middle, Mr. Moyer says, Mr. Smith, I assume you're agreeing to this. We discussed the 2 checks in that. So it is in the record, I believe. And I realize that stipulations and judicial admissions aren't exactly the same thing. Judicial admissions can be agency-based, and they can be stipulations. Stipulations like an agreement. But I believe the record, and by the way, if there is a default in the record as far as jurisdiction, then you don't have jurisdiction. A case on that is,
so what was the district court missing here? A dollar? Is that what we're talking about?
The record was, and it's also in the statement of facts in the appellant's brief. It's in his even in the reply brief, and he's gone through it today, the admissions were there were two checks, with three checks if you count the last dollar, which was a day late. A check for $100 was given to the clerk of the county, which in this case, pursuant to Omer, becomes like the county court. Another check made out for filing fees was for $82. The obvious agreement at the time between the clerk and Mr. Moyer was the $82 was to be forwarded to district court. And it was. The clerk did what she was supposed to. The $100 was for fees for cost, preparation, that type of stuff.
What does the record tell us how the $100 was disposed? Does the record tell us, does the county clerk still have the $100, or was it paid over to the district court, or do we know?
The record doesn't say, but the statute requires that those monies be paid into the treasurer, that $100, it was for cost. So that money by statute would have been paid to the treasurer to cover preparation costs, those type of things.
But the record doesn't tell us what happened.
The record doesn't tell us what happened. It certainly didn't go to district court. The record tells us that. But I know from statute would have had to go, assuming compliance with the statute. State versus Smith is a case, and as I said, if there's a failure, and State versus Smith was a case, it's at 12 Nebraska Appellate 150, and there are several cases like this where the clerk had not, county court clerk had not stamped the journal entry. So there is the appeal, the money's paid, everything, but it becomes an issue later on because how do you determine if it's timely or not? In that case, the county court actually stamped the order after the district court had decided. In that case, the appellant lost. There's no jurisdiction, even though the appellant had done nothing wrong. In this case, I think it's very clear. It is very clear that this court, district court, did not have subject matter jurisdiction. 25, 27, 29, 1 and 2, as the court pointed out, are the jurisdictional parts of that bill.
Mr. Smith, I'm enjoying listening to you, but your colleague, his time is going away.
I know, and I was watching, but I did tell her I'd look back, and if she frowned, I would stop. So, and I did look back. So with that.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Schlecht, good morning to you. It's difficult to frown when you're wearing a mask.
When you're wearing a mask, that's right. I gave you permission to go along if you needed to. May it please the court, my name is Michelle Schlecht, and I am here on behalf of the Appalachian Elkhorn Valley Sportsman Club. In light of our shared time, I do join in the arguments that were made by Mr. Smith today on behalf of the Madison County Commissioners. With respect to the first two assignments of error, the facts are not disputed by the parties. I think that's clear in not only the Bill of Exceptions, but also by Mr. Moyer's statements here today, where we have a filing fee paid that was $1 short. And with respect to what Mr. Smith was talking about and the judicial admissions that were made, Mr. Moyer expressed to the district court in several places, you know, I don't know what it was, how this happened, but the check to the clerk of the district court was for $82 instead of $83. Again, he says we gave them a check for $82, not $83 on page 11, and admits that this is a situation where there's been an error. With respect to the statute that addresses perfecting the appeal 25-2729, there is no substantial compliance or other sort of leeway with regard to the requirements for perfecting the appeal. It does require that the notice of appeal is filed and that the docket filing fee is deposited with the clerk. And so with respect to the judicial admissions and the stipulated facts between the parties, we then look at what appellant's arguments are to try to get around that. And he talked about a couple of those today.
I beg your pardon. This is Justice Miller-Lerman. Do you see in any of those arguments a statutory basis for the clerk to throw some of that $100 at the 82 shortfall?
I do not see any statutory basis, nor do I see anything in the case law that would indicate that the clerk has that independent responsibility or duty or even the discretion to make that decision when she's given two checks, one that's identified to the district court as filing fees and one that's identified to the county clerk for cash bond. With respect to a prior question that was asked, what happened to that cash bond? I think if you do look at the Bill of Exceptions, Mr. Moyer's statements indicate that he's checked with the district court clerk. They don't have the $100, and the $100 is presumably still sitting with the county clerk waiting for whatever it was intended for, maybe used for, as Mr. Moyer said, a transcript or other costs or expenses that may come up.
Is it your position that a cash bond was not required by law in this case?
That would be my position.
And if there was no cash bond required by law, but $100 provided to the clerk of to the county clerk, what is the county clerk to do with it? What's the impact on our analysis? If it wasn't required for something else and the clerk had it, does that impact our analysis?
I don't think that it impacts the analysis due to the fact that, as Mr. Moyer stated, oftentimes what happens is you have transcript fees, you have other fees. And if his intention was, I gave her that money to use towards transcript fees or other costs that arise in the course of litigation, that, I guess, supports the fact that it was not for a filing fee. The check for the filing fee was $82. That's what he made out to the district court. That's what he gave direction to the clerk to pay to the district court as the filing fee. No other direction was given by Mr. Moyer or anyone else to apply cash bond, to apply those funds to make up for the shortfall.
Thank you.
And I'm sorry, I was going to say, if we do that, I think the burden then is shifted from the appellants to perfect the appeal to someone else in this situation. My time is up. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have any time for rebuttal? We have no time for rebuttal. Counsel, you are excused, and the court will go on to the next case of the day, which is State versus Hill.